Since the show began almost 2 years ago, a change of tune has highlighted some of the best up-and-coming artists out of these West Virginia hills, with podcasty chats ranging from the Sea to New God, Roswell Kid to Bishops, and beyond. But those interviews have been a bit infrequent, and since West Virginia Day is coming up, not to mention a change of tune's second birthday, we thought we'd do something special. 30 days, 30 brand new West Virginia music interviews that range from Morgantown alt rockers and Parkersburg senior songwriters to West Virginia music venues and regional artist management and beyond, all of which contribute to the state's wild and wonderful music scene. And today we are chatting with Martinsburg native Christian Lopez, the frontman for the up-and-coming Americana outfit named Christian Lopez Band. From playing bars in the Eastern Panhandle to appearing on American Idol, not to mention Rolling Stone magazine features and debut on NPR's Mountain Stage, this young West Virginian has accomplished quite a lot in his 21 years. And those are just some of the topics we brought up in our Charleston studios during this West Virginia Music Chat. Do you just want to go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my name is Christian Lopez from Martinsburg, West Virginia, and I have a band, and we have been on the road for the last few years. I put out my first record almost exactly one year ago. It's been a couple days past, but since then, it's just been on the road and working hard, playing shows, and that's where I am.
So would you say you're currently based in Martinsburg, or are you traveling so much, and are you based elsewhere?
I am based in Martinsburg.
Okay.
Sure. I'm on the road so much. I'm in Nashville once a month for weeks at a time. But when I'm off, I'm here in Martinsburg. Well, there in Martinsburg. And relaxing and separating myself at home with my family, my friends for that short amount of time that I get sometimes.
So. And are you from Martinsburg originally?
Yes.
Okay. So how did you get started in music up there?
My mom was a music teacher. She taught like show choir and choir and piano, and she had studied opera, done all that kind of stuff. So she started all of us kids, actually. There's two others, and we all started piano at five. And from there, it just kind of, we all kind of went our own direction. I started guitar at nine and then tried to learn as many stringed instruments as I could from there. But my mom definitely came in and started me young, and my dad came in and kind of guided me the right direction with taste. You know, he gave me his record collection and stuff like that. And I think it was a good combo. So I had two very music-loving parents.
Oh, that's so sweet. And you're saying that too because your dad's in the room. So it's like you can't say anything negative about him.
I like that shirt.
Flattery. So what music did your dad get you into then?
Classic rock.
Okay.
Hardcore. My brother and I actually had a classic rock cover band until I was like 14 years old.
What was the name of it?
The Licks, L-I-X, swear. And we did that for years. Man, we did the local talent show, played a lot of garages.
Yeah.
Had the cops called on us a few times. We played Foreigner, Ozzy, AC. We played so much AC/DC, it was ridiculous. I swear, I still find so many people tagging me in photos of me making the most ridiculous faces on stage. And it's because of my AC/DC upbringing. Angus Young was a huge face-making inspiration for me, and I don't think I'll ever be able to shake it.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you're wearing right now like a Nashville t-shirt that looks like what's based off of Black Flag.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you grew up with very much a rock background, but your music isn't really that kind of rock now, is it?
No.
You'd say it's more folk rock or Americana based.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's kind of where we've fallen.
Okay. And how did you make that transition from liking rock and roll to making music that's not exactly in that genre?
Well, I became a fan of the band when I was around 15, 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that was kind of the first introduction for me into that world. It was when I went to my uncle's house one day to help him move some stuff. And my dad was with me, and it was just us, you know, hauling stuff in and out. And he had the Avett Brothers Live Volume 3 playing on his TV as we were, you know, moving, sweating, hauling stuff in and out. And they were playing Talk on Indolence. I remember the song. And they were just rocking so hard, harder than I think I'd even ever rocked, but with a banjo and an acoustic guitar, stand-up bass, you know, all this stuff. And it was just, it was an eye-opener. You know, it was something I'd never seen. I didn't even own an acoustic guitar. I only had an electric guitar. I had a BC Rich Warlock, which is like, you know, like a Viking-looking axe of a guitar. And, but that was the day I was like, wow, you know, you can make as much energy as I'm making over here, but with this acoustic setup, and make it even more crazy and more energetic. And I just thought I'd give it a shot, and I loved it, so stuck with it. Bought an acoustic guitar and just kept playing and kept listening, and eventually I fell in love with a lot of other bands and kind of discovered the classic country that I've loved today, and just kind of wrote on that.
So what was your first time performing live then, with that new sound in mind?
I think the first time was I started doing open mics when I was like 16, 17.
In Martinsburg?
In Martinsburg area, yeah, Shepherdstown, here and there. That was kind of the birthplace, actually. Shepherdstown, there's a little place called Blue Moon Cafe, and they had an open mic every Wednesday. And there was a guy named Alex who would host it. And there wouldn't be many people. And I would go every week. I started out going by myself. And I would play just my favorite songs, you know, on the acoustic. Just plug in, play, and play my three, and then, you know, watch everyone else. But I was going every week there for months at a time. I eventually started bringing percussionists with me. I met other musicians, brought them with me, and started to slowly introduce, you know, some of my own songs. And that was kind of where it all started. Then it started to grow. People started to come. I started to meet people. And, you know, every now and then I'll still stop by the Blue Moon. But, yeah, that's where it all started, Shepherdstown, West Virginia.
Did you have a pseudonym? Did you go by your own name? Did you?
You know, Shepherdstown had a lot of musicians with a lot of funky names. And they changed their names every week. So I was like, I'm going to do that, too. So I would go in there and I would just make up a new name every time. So no one would know what number I was on the board, because, you know, you'd have to fill it in with a dry erase marker.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just ridiculous names, sometimes disgusting, but sometimes just weird.
Do you want to share,
honestly can't remember. I think I wrote this down once as, the Artful Dodgers, because when I was a little kid, I was the Artful Dodger in Oliver.
Yeah.
And then...
That's not too bad.
A couple of the others, I can't even remember. Probably just ridiculous, immature little names, but that's where it all began, beginnings.
Well, and the Shepherdstown community in Martinsburg, they were supportive. I guess it sounds like they eventually kind of started coming out more and more to hear your music, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I booked as many possible shows as I could. I said yes to everything, and I think that's just what it takes, you know, just playing as much as you can and playing for as many people as you can, and that's how it all gets started. And we did a very, I guess, grassroots kind of style of trying to, you know, get good shows and get people there. And we worked really hard at it, and we definitely put the work in, for sure.
I guess after a little bit of time doing that and getting a kind of a reservoir of songwriting and singing, then you turned to American Idol and you competed in the show twice, right?
Yes.
So how did those rings around the Hollywood cycle go?
Well, I was 16. I remember I went out and I did it, and I got out there and I got a little bit of TV time, and I remember it was a very interesting experience, much more of a TV show.
Yeah.
But I came home and it got me some gigs. And that's what I wanted. You know, this was before I really dove in to the music that I'm making now. And it was just great for me getting performance experience. You know, it just got me a ton of gigs. And that's all I wanted. At the end of the day, I just wanted to get a ton of shows. And that was a huge help.
Yeah. I mean, if you're talking about name recognition, then getting on one of those, I don't even know, the Nielsen ratings for that at the time, maybe 3 million television sets in a single night. I mean, that's insane. That must have helped out. Even like beyond the West Virginia thing, anyone that's watching maybe on the West Coast or Northeast seeing you and then, you know, you doing pretty well, then that must have given you some credibility and audience.
It was helpful for a time.
Yeah.
I feel like nowadays, I honestly steer clear from it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's starting to... Well, luckily, I feel like it has almost all the way been forgotten
mm-hmm.
in the past, and I want minus, it to be,
minus
to be
YouTube.
Honest.
Because exactly. Because you're still on YouTube.
I know, and I've actually looked into those things, and I've had a couple things removed.
Really?
To be honest. And I've never really talked about it before, so this is interesting that we're talking about it.
Yeah, because I was looking up, like I was just going through your bio today just to recap before I did my little list of notes, and then I saw that you popped up on like one of the, you know, it wasn't the actual segment of you performing, it was a
like
kind of,
thing?
Yeah, or like just one. Like one of those ones that just shows you like, who is Christian Lopez, and talks about your, yeah. you know, people you like,
exactly.
and you know, smiley.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I didn't even know. And then I checked in and then I saw that you were on it twice. And the first time you got sick a little bit and the second time you came back and all this stuff. I find that whole television show reality competition thing interesting because I know it's not real.
Yeah.
I know it's real people involved, real stories, but they shine it off. They make it glossy. They make it, you know, bite sized so people can consume it and then forget mm-hmm. about it later.
Absolutely.
So I can understand why that's not really something, you know, it's. If you could get it off the internet, I could see why you'd want to.
Yeah, well...
Not saying anything against you, because you did fine.
Exactly.
But
so,
just...
And yeah, I appreciate it. It's a thing that... not necessarily that I've, you know, been focusing on, you know, getting taken off or anything. It's just things that I don't bring up anymore. You know, the team, you know, when I've assembled, you know, a great band and good team members around me, you know, putting out these records and working on the music, they found me... with no knowledge of that. You
really?
Know, I found them. They found me with zero knowledge of that in the background.
That's a good thing.
And that's what I wanted. You know, I was young. I was a sophomore in high school. And this was before I'd, you know, ever written a song, sat down and really focused on what I wanted to do. I was just the kid that loved music and loved to sing and play. Obviously, I had a lot of encouragement to go out and give that a shot.
Yeah.
But when it was done, I used it to, you know, get shows and such. And I eventually started writing my own songs and working on what I wanted to do and found a team that jumped on board and a band that jumped on board because of my songs and the direction we wanted to go in. I've got the house all to myself. On my top shelf, and don't forget to be sure you put the locks on the door. I guarantee you won't see me anymore.
So when you came back then and you know did stuff after American Idol, what was one of the first things that you did? Did you try focusing on touring? Did you want to, you know, release your own record?
When I got home, all I wanted to do was just play. And I wasn't really going out yet. I wasn't, like, traveling. I was just playing the region. And I played it multiple times a week, every week for, 2 years. So that's what I did. And I learned how to put on a show and you know, get the right band and get tight. So that was my focus. And I think it was super necessary. And it was after that that we started to really tour and, you know, buckle down with songs and stuff like that.
And the band that you were with then is the band that you're currently with now, or is there a bit of a changeover?
There was a lot of evolving, for sure. You know, it started out with me and just some guys that I'd met, you know, school buddies, stuff like that. You know,
of course.
But obviously, you know, things changed. Everyone was always older than me. They always went off to college. They did other things. I'd always have changing members. My drummer has changed multiple times. Bassists, crazy. Always hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chelsea joined me. So that was the focus. We just wanted to, that was my focus. I just wanted to have this sound. I wanted to play my songs. And I just wanted whoever wanted to jump on board. And if they had to leave, I'd just, you know, find someone else to come in and jump in. Just because I wanted to make music, give the songs what they deserved. And that's what we did. So
I think half the battle is trying to keep it consistent. Because it seems like so many bands I know... They finally have reached the point where they have a consistent lineup, but it's taken them years to get that because there's always been, like you said, there's always someone that's, you know, maybe they don't value the music so much or they don't think it's that important, so they don't really do it. They leave the band, or maybe someone's moving out of state to leave West Virginia, so then they have to fill up, you know, a drummer slot or another guitar. So I think that's good that you finally have a consistent band that's backing you now.
Yeah, for sure.
And they're all from Martinsburg, I assume?
My drummer is living in Nashville.
Okay.
And my bass player lives in D.C., but Chelsea lives up in Shepherdstown.
Okay, cool. How long did you know her for?
Met her 4 years ago. We were hosting a youth artist series for younger kids in the community, and the guy organizing it asked me to host and asked her to host as co-hosts. So that's when we met.
Oh,
so sweet. At the local Shepherdstown Opera House.
Oh, now, you mentioned Blue Moon. You've mentioned the Opera House. What are the other venues up there that, you know, you played at or toured through?
Well, there's not too many, to be honest, in our neck of the woods. We probably did the most in Northern Virginia because it was so close. We played a lot in Winchester. We had a monthly gig at a place called Piccadilly's. Big bar. Big, very kind of frat kind of bar, you know.
I love frat bars.
Guys that, you know, in their Oakleys and their...
Oh, no. I came from Surratt frat land. Exactly. I know exactly who you're talking about.
It's not me, but... You know, they had this big boat stage, and we'd play out there. We'd play inside during the winter, play 4 hours every time we were there. You know, we loved it because we got to play, and it was awesome, and people, you know, would get drunk and dance all night long. But we could also, you know, stuff our faces with awesome, you know, brew pub food. So it was great. We did that for years. I did blues jams. Mm-hmm. I hosted open mics. We played a ton of the bars. We did the bar scene like crazy. We definitely did our due.
Yeah.
So yeah, we did a lot of Northern Virginia. I hosted the open mic in Martinsburg, and I would play a couple things in Shepherdstown, but only little small acoustic things we really had available to us in our parts were like coffee houses and stuff like that that we would play at. But it wasn't until later that we would play the Opera House in Shepherdstown. Or actually, just last year when we did our release show for our record, we just took an old building that was in downtown that's like a real estate office, just a big open room, and cleared it out and put the show in there. Like,
oh, cool.
We kind of like doing the...
DIY production.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I see that there's a rise with that in West Virginia between the living room sessions and DIY.
Yeah.
I think having that control over, you know, the look of the place, the sound of the place, how many people you're bringing in, the money, all of that is just giving people a renewed interest in the music scene.
Absolutely.
Which is nice. But you never, it sounds like you kind of kept to the Eastern Panhandle, but you never really went down to like the Huntington area or Charleston or any of those areas around West Virginia.
I hadn't. No, it was... That was kind of new for me. The Eastern Panhandle it seems like such an
ecosystem.
A region of its own. Yeah. So I was always there, but my family all lives down here, my grandma and all the extended family all down here. So we come down here as much as we can, but it wasn't until later that we really started to play around here. We'd come to, I think the first place we came down here was Sam's Uptown Cafe.
Mm-hmm.
Upstairs, we did that like two or three times, and it was awesome.
Yeah,
first time I met Adam Harris, he was there,
the executive producer for Mountain Stage.
Oh,
yeah,
he was there dancing. I was like 17, and I'm like, I gotta impress this guy. I just remember thinking, we did the Blue Parrot.
Mm-hmm. Yep, still
we did
here.
This like in 2 days back to back. I'm surprised they let us do that. We did Boulevard and Empty Glass multiple times. We hit like some of the crucial Charleston bars.
You pretty much named them. I think is there anywhere else? You see Tavern, Parrot. There's a couple that have popped up. I mean, Bluegrass Kitchen, you could do music there. And the Glass is a big one. Besides the Civic Center and the Clay Center, Mountain Stage, which you did Mountain Stage last year.
So amazing.
You pretty much, you hit them all in Charleston.
Yeah. We love it. I think Live on the Levee is going to be a new check for us as well. We're... I've been trying to get that one for a long time, so
Really excited. I'm very excited. And actually, this interview is going to go out that morning, so
To
kind of give people a preview of like the type of person you are and the music and all that.
Well, I'll see you all tonight.
Well, if there's a river to my left, another mile straight ahead, I will move until I find what I deserve. I don't know where I'm headed, but the picture is embedded in my mind as I move on through the curve. Well, the nights have been uneasy, and the days won't see me through to carry on this life that I once knew. And with the will that makes us men, I will never begin to follow the signs, to follow you. And will I see you again? We'd like to hope on our promises.
But let's go ahead and talk about your first release. You mentioned it before. It's your first full-length, Onward. Uh-huh. And it's out now, but it came out last year.
Yes.
How did that record come together?
Well, I had signed with the label in Nashville called Blaster Records, an independent label, the kind of a mainstream country kind of label. I was the first outside of mainstream country project, mm-hmm. Americana, we'll say.
Yeah.
We made an EP, and the producer we were using was Dave Cobb. And we had sat down with Dave about making this EP just to kind of give it a test run with the producer, with the label. And so we did that, and then as soon as that was released, they made the decision that we should just jump straight in and make the full record. So we got the dates. We got the, you know, I had the songs. We found the time that, you know, everyone was available, and it was soon, so it was like the next month, and we were in the recording. I think it came out in October, the pilot did, the EP, and we were recording the full length in December.
So that was, what, 2014 then? Or
2014, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Wow. And so we recorded that December, and 10 days in the studio, he brought in his Dave's preferred rhythm section, his guys, which are great. They played on the Sturgill Records, the Jamie Johnson Records, some great records. And mm-hmm. they came in, they really put some great stuff all over these tracks. You know, Dave is very hands-on. And together, you know, we'd tear apart the songs, put them back together, and we'd play it all live. And, you know, that's where the magic really comes, you know, by doing something like that. And Dave really has a great outlook on that. And we just made it happen. We just went in there and light speed.
Yeah.
And we just made it happen.
Well, shortly after the release of it, you performed at Americana Music Fest, and it was like last September.
Yeah.
And, you know, this basically a huge fest full of like emerging, legendary Americana acts and just any act out there that's in that kind of realm. And Rolling Stone named you one of the best newcomers, like that you were the best newcomer, which between the album release coming out so quickly and coming together so well, and then that, and playing at Americana Music Fest, you must have just been over the moon.
I was. I remember the morning I got that link sent to me by my manager. I was sitting on the couch watching TV. And, you know, the sad thing about this business is nowadays, at least, I always envy artists of the past because you have to have a very strong online presence.
Mm-hmm, you do.
And it's stressful, you know, when you have to constantly engage, and I love engaging my fans, but you know, when you have people working with you and you're working really hard, you know, to milk every day as an artist, you really got to make sure you're giving all you can. So I'm sitting there stressing about that kind of thing, and then suddenly this link gets sent to me, and I had always dreamed of like seeing something like that under that Rolling Stone
headline.
It's crazy. And yeah, it was unbelievable. I just, as fast as I could, I just wanted to share it with everybody, and I did. And I remember it was a crazy show at Americana Fest because we only got 5 songs. It was at the High Watt. It was specifically a showcase for the agency that was booking us. So they had a bunch of great acts. They had a band called Great Peacock, a guy named Corb Lund, mm-hmm. a couple others. It was great, great lineup. And we got 5 songs. 3 songs in, I've already broken all of my guitars. All the strings have popped. It usually happens every time, but usually not that fast. And it was the last 2 songs, strings are broken. I'm like yelling. There's a whole crowd, and I'm like, I need a guitar. Somebody. So the guitarist from the Great Peacock gave me his like late 60s D28, tuned down a whole step. So I had to put a capo on just to play in standard tuning. And we just rocked out the last two songs as hard as we could. We just winged it, but it was so much fun. And, you know, at that point, my brain was like, all right, my guitars are broken. I'm on this guitar. It's capoed because it's not even in the right tuning. I'm just going to, you know, rock this as hard as I can. And it was kind of cool, too, because most of the time press things are always pitches by, you know, a publicist or something.
Yeah.
So this lady just happened to be there, the Rolling Stone writer. And that almost made it a little more special.
Did you know that she was there?
I had no idea.
So you knew after the fact, I guess, because you're like, oh, okay, so that woman, and now I'm going to stalk her to see which in the audience she was. And
exactly. Yeah. I honestly have never seen her face. I have no idea who she is. I think we follow each other on Twitter.
Yeah.
But that's all I know. She seems like I'd like to meet her. And
yeah. Thank her.
Tell her how cool I think she is. So it was special. It was very cool.
Yeah. And then shortly after that, a month later, then you made your Mountain Stage debut in Charleston.
Oh, man.
What was Mountain Stage to you growing up? Did you listen on the radio or listen to podcasts or have parents talk to you about it?
Absolutely. You know, it obviously has a strong impact on the word of mouth music scene in West Virginia. You know, it's almost like a checkpoint for artists, you know, going up the ranks. And I guess I realized it one day. We pulled up like a list, you know, we were listening to bands that I was getting into at the time, and they all said Mountain Stage, like on what they'd done. And I was like, how are they doing that? And how can I do that? You know, that you always, I feel like you'd always meet someone who knew someone from Mountain Stage who you could, you know, get some luck with. You know, my aunt said she knew this guy, and I had a buddy who knew this guy,
yeah,
who maybe we could talk to this guy about knowing this guy. So everyone knew a guy. And so it was just, you know, it created so much suspense and hype for even, you know, getting to talk to Mountain Stage. So I was sending them demos I was making at like 13, 14 years old. You know, sending them in emails. And writing really heartfelt emails with my parents, like, all right, I don't even know how to write an email, Mom and Dad, just help me do this. And it was amazing news. I remember when I heard that we were going to play Mountain Stage, I was like running around the house, freaking out, and calling everybody. Absolutely. I called my band. I'm like, sit down, take a seat before I tell you this. No, it was amazing. Yeah.
If you had to describe your sound for someone who hasn't seen you live, what would you describe as like the Christian Lopez sound?
You know, it's whenever someone asks me like what kind of music I make, I always say we get lumped into the Americana category,
mm-hmm,
rather than saying we're an Americana band, just because, I feel like it's always changing, but I think the sound that best, you know, would describe us is like, you know, it's so hard to pinpoint your own sound. It's, I would say, you know, maybe a to the bone kind of band where you have four members, a bass and a drummer, and you have an acoustic guitar and a banjo, and you play that acoustic guitar and a banjo like you're playing some rock show, you know, for 10,000 people, even if there's only, you know, 30 people. It's just a show where everyone leaves 110% on the stage and plays some of their favorite songs. We, you know, we try to pay tribute to Bill Withers and a couple other great artists. We try to rock as hard as we can. But at the same time, we love to get really intimate. You know, Chelsea and I love to, you know, just get on one mic and play some of our favorite folk songs and I don't know. It's hard to find the word, but we just like to give people a very genuine, to the bone, no gimmicks kind of show, and that's sort of the direction I think we find ourselves going in.
Now, you've been touring extensively for the last couple of years. In your mind, what is the key to touring successfully, whether it's in West Virginia or New York or, you know, around the nation?
I think that the key to touring successfully is a good touring band, like a band that you get along with, like guys that you don't care or don't mind being on the road with for like months at a time.
And smelling and drinking,
exactly,
and burping.
Actually, most of the time, it's been the really stinky ones that have been the best. Like,
really?
Like, our guys, we've had a couple, like, really, like, clean, you know, kind of uptight kind of guys out there. But it's, I think that's the key. As long as you have great guys out who are easy to get along with and we all love each other and we, you know, have a good time, then touring's a breeze. You set up, you play, you rock as hard as you can, and you just get back in the car and you go to the next one, and you're having a great time. It's your buddies. It's your friends. So that is definitely the key.
And you've been, I was trying to get the list down, but you've toured with or played before with Dave Matthews Band, Humming House, I'm trying to think who else. Can you name off some of the other ones that I can't remember?
Yeah, we've done a bunch of shows with the Black Lilies, mm-hmm. Sister Hazel, done a few with American Aquarium. I did a couple with Corey Smith. I've gone out solo once or twice with Steve Forbert. We did a pre-show for Zach Brown a couple years ago, and we did an opening for Miranda Lambert actually at the Belk Bowl. And yeah, bunch. I love opening slots. There's been a lot of them.
Did you learn anything from those bands as to how to play music or how to put on a good show?
Yeah, absolutely. We've done a lot of stuff with Sister Hazel, and they have like an awesome, you know, it's like a well-oiled machine, as they say, you know. Good crew, great band. I almost love seeing like the setup process and like the flight cases. Like those make me drool more than gear nowadays. Like if they got a great flight case and a great way of packing their stuff and loading in and out, I'm like, wow, that is awesome. That's a cool SG. But that system you got there and that case is awesome.
And kinda, I want it's kind of dorky.
It is so dorky. Like I've started to slowly realize that I'm not the only one. So many of us are like drooling over cases, and Sister Hazel's like all these custom cases, and they're just really good at you know, keeping their gear safe and getting it down to like a consistent process of setting up, loading in, loading out. But at the same time, you learn how to talk to a crowd, interact with a crowd, and connect, and you know, put on the best show possible. And you know, every band's different, so you take a little bit of something from everyone you play with, and just helps make your show better all around.
When you bring up that you're from West Virginia, or that someone introduces you, you know, Christian Lopez from Martinsburg, West Virginia, what's the general reaction to that?
People are always, they're always surprised, but I love it. I love saying I'm from West Virginia because it's, there's not many people out touring, I guess, compared to other states, as West Virginia. And, yeah, people automatically think of like, you know, the Wonderful Whites or Buck Wild, you know, things like that. Buck Wild. Crazy stuff that obviously doesn't represent, you know, who we are as a majority. So I love to, you know, use that as like their first impression, right? This kid's from West Virginia. You know, what is this going to be like? So I make sure they know, and I try to milk the fact that I'm from West Virginia. I love it here, obviously. And yeah, so it's always an interesting, like, okay, this kid's from, you know, Wonderful Whites territory. What are we going to get? But it's nice to prove them wrong the best I can.
Christian Lopez Band's newest release is Onward. The band recently contributed to Amazon's Songs of Summer playlist with this exclusive cover of King Harvest, Dancing in the Moonlight. You can catch the band's free show at Live and Levy in Charleston tonight, that's June 17th, or see them on tour later this summer. Hear more West Virginia music on A Change of Tune, airing Saturday nights at 10 on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And for more hashtag WV Music Chats, make sure to go to wvpublic.org/wvmusic. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.